This is Karen Lyle of Sailsport Talk, and I am here inside the Berkeley Yacht Club with Staff Commodore Mark Bird and Race Chair Bobby Tosse, who is also a Staff Commodore. Tell me a little bit about the Wheeler Race and its background.
It's the Rollo Wheeler Memorial Regatta, named after Rollo Wheeler, who was also a Staff Commodore here at the Berkeley Yacht Club. And this year was the 48th Rollo Wheeler Memorial Regatta. Would have been the 49th, but we had to skip it last year because of COVID.
And you had smaller boats this time because of needing to have smaller crews. Tell us a little bit about the courses that you were on.
We had a little bit more smaller boats than we normally would, just because a lot of folks are still a little bit reluctant to gather in groups to come out. So a little harder to get crew for the bigger boats, a little easier to get crew for the smaller boats. So we had more smaller boats this year. So the courses, we run, it's a two-day event, and on Saturday we have two separate courses. We have the Wheeler course, and we have the City of Berkeley course. We run them about a mile apart, but it helps us to run the races at the same time without things getting too crowded. So on Saturday, we had two races on each course, and then Sunday, we had a single race, which was a pursuit race, where the boats start at each boat has its own start time based on the PHRF rating or how fast the boat is.
And tell us about the weather.
The weather was absolutely spectacular. We had the perfect spring day. It was sunny, mid-60s. We had a very nice breeze out of the west-northwest coming from the Golden Gate. And it started off 8 to 10 knots, and by the end of the day, it was blowing in the mid to lower teens. So absolutely perfect.
And how did your racers feel about being out there on the race course?
As far as I can tell, everybody was very happy to be out on the race course. I managed the City of Berkeley course from the committee boat, and the racing was very, very good. We had we didn't have any stragglers. It was very competitive, generally it was one of the better races I've seen since I've been doing this.
Thank you so much, Mark. Bobby, you happen to be one of the old salts here at Berkeley Yacht Club. Can you tell us a little bit what an old salt is?
Very old, been around for a long, long time. We first joined 70-something or other, and I've been a member ever since, and so we've just been around for a very, very long time.
You were probably here when the Rollo Wheeler race started.
I believe I was. I think I was trying to remember that. Dave Simpson was the race chairman when I first joined, and the story I heard was he forgot to do the winter races, so instead he put together this weekend event because Rollo Wheeler had just died.
All right, thank you for that. And yes, Tuesdays at 9:40 a.m. Pacific time here at Sports Byline on Titillating Sports, we like to check in and talk a little sailing, and we do it with the co-host Karen Lyle from SailSportTalk.com. How you doing, Karen?
I'm doing great, Rick. Been out there on the water a couple times since we last talked.
How are you with your vaxes? You got one? You got two?
I have both, so I'm good to go. I mean, I'm still masking up for courtesy to others, but, you know, it does certainly feel better to be vaccinated.
Well, I'll be coming in. I'm double myself, so I'm going to be coming into studio next month. So hopefully just a couple more of these on Skype. But speaking of Skype, we're very happy to be joined from the United Kingdom by Pip Hare. Pip Hare is a professional solo ocean racer with 25 years experience. And last year when she raced a 60-foot yacht around the world in the Vendée Globe Race, only the ninth woman in history to achieve this goal. Pip, you know, it's easy to just say you have that British bulldog spirit, but not everyone is as brave as you. How did you get to the point where this was something that you wanted to try?
Well, I guess the Vendée Globe Race has been a lifelong goal for me. I first read about it when the first edition happened, so I was 17 years old, and it just immediately sparked my imagination because the race itself is, you know, probably the toughest sailing race on the planet. To sail non-stop solo around the world in a 60-foot boat is about as hard as it gets. And, you know, what really appealed to me was the fact that men and women compete on equal terms. The race is open to everyone. It just took me sort of a lifetime of sailing and working on the water and racing in other classes to get the experience to compete.
Well, Pip, this was quite a journey. Quite a rough winter there. I guess it went from November to this early part of the year. Tell us about one of the moments that you had out there where you thought you might not make it.
I mean, it's of course, we went down into the Southern Ocean in the summer, so theoretically the weather was a little bit better for us at that time of year. But I think one of my toughest moments was in the Southern Ocean after I'd been down there for about 5 weeks. So, you know, really starting to draw on my reserves of energy and mentally quite tired. And I discovered a crack in one of my rudders, which would have, you know, potentially put me out of the race had I not had a spare rudder on board. But sort of thousands of miles from anywhere and on my own, I had to replace a rudder between gale force winds in the Southern Ocean. And that was probably my toughest moment of the race.
Was there a moment when you started to leave the start at Les Sables d'Olonne where you wanted to turn around and say, never mind, I changed my mind?
Never. I mean, it was a real battle for me to get to the start line. I started my campaign at the beginning of 2019. I was chartering my boat. I didn't have any funding. And all the way through 2019, I ran my campaign with volunteers and a crowd fund, and slowly businesses started to get involved with sponsorship. But it was a really, really hard journey. And then in the middle of 2020, we were joined by Medallia as our title sponsors. And that kind of gave me the boost I needed to get to the line in good form. But I'd battled so hard for 2 years, and so many people had put their faith in me and invested in me. I was fairly determined from the start gun that I was going to make the most of it.
Well, out there on the ocean, there are just some marvelous moments when you have, you know, the wind is just right, the weather is beautiful. What was one of those moments for you that you really remember and appreciate?
I loved pretty much every day out there. You know, it's always different. There's always something to learn. But I was surprised by how much I enjoyed the Southern Ocean. I thought I would be terrified most of the time. But actually, when you get one of those weather systems and you get it just right and the boat is absolutely flying, it's such a pure sailing experience. I really enjoyed that.
A couple more questions for our guest, Pip Hare. In 2004, on this show, I had Bruce Schwab, who was the first American to officially complete the Vendée Globe race. He would call me once a week from a satellite phone, and I think only maybe once or twice did it not work, but it was very fascinating over the months to follow him. And sometimes he would be up, sometimes the mood, you could tell he was really down. He talked about some nights he wasn't able to sleep because he was in an area where there were logs floating in the water. What is that like when you run the gamut of emotions like that?
I think that's why the Vendée Globe race is such a fascinating race, because it's not, you know, it's so much more than just about your sailing ability. It takes a huge mental strength, emotional resilience, you're problem solving all the time. And the boats now, you know, when Bruce did it, you know, I think that it was a lot more isolating because the satcoms weren't as great. And now we can be in constant contact if we like. But the flip side of that is the boats are very, very noisy. So you've got constant background noise all the time. You're being thrown around. You kind of have to, the way I dealt with it was just always remembering why I was there and always remembering that I'd chosen to be there. And it's a constantly changing environment. So when things feel bad, you just kind of cling on to the knowledge that it will change at some point. You just have to get through it.
Well, Pip, there's also just a little bit of luck when you don't hit things or get caught in nets or other things on the ocean. You have to repair things yourself. So how did you gain the skills to be able to do those kind of repairs on your boat?
Yes, they say the Vendée Globe race is one problem a day. I think it's probably more than that. I think if we added them up, it would be 1.5 problems a day. But of course, they don't come in a linear form like that. Sometimes you've got 10 things break a day, sometimes nothing. And there's a huge range of skills that you need, from, you know, glass fiber work to sail repairs to electronics. I've worked on the water my whole life. I've always maintained and fitted out my own boats. And I lived aboard a boat for 13 years, which really gave me a lot of skills on diagnosis and repairing. So it's kind of just accumulated over a lifetime, really.
So I have to ask, are you a Philippa?
Only when I've been very naughty and when my mother's talking.
Okay, very well. What would you say during the Vendée was your nadir, the one where maybe you cried or you just started breaking things and wishing you could just quit? Or did you not have a day like that?
I think my most difficult days were actually, I got very ill. I had a really massive allergic reaction to a jellyfish sting, which was so left field. And I hadn't mentally planned for a problem like that. That was difficult. I wasn't expecting to be physically sick. But in general, I just managed to get through everything and stay happy and positive all the time. And I always wanted to be where I was.
Well, Pip, I really relate to you because I'm allergic to jellyfish too. And when they have the sea lice out there, always, it seems like, you know, and I'm always having to deal with those kind of allergic reactions. What kind of medications do you have to take with you on that trip to handle those? Did you have an EpiPen or?
Yes, we've got, there's a huge range of medication and medical support kit on the boat, and we have to train before we go. We have to do a specialized training because actually treating yourself is something quite different, you know, having to inject yourself or put stitches in yourself. I had to learn how to put a cannula in the back of my hand, all those sorts of things. But we have medics on the shore, and every time you open the big yellow box that's got all of the medical supplies in it, you have to have a sign off from a medic on the shore. So there's always somebody working with you on a diagnosis and a treatment plan, and you always have to tell people what you're taking when and why, so that there's just a really good stream of information and everybody knows what's going on.
How about the fauna? Did you have some critters who kept you company? Were it an albatross or flying fish or dolphins, things like that?
Yes. I mean, in general, there isn't a huge, you don't see a massive amount of wildlife when you're really deep in the middle of the ocean, because the stuff you see tends to be in around the edges where there's more to eat on the surface. But off the tip of South Africa, I saw some hourglass dolphins, which are beautiful. They look like mini orcas. Black and white, and they came and played with the boat for a bit. And then the albatross, just they take your breath away. You know, we've all seen them on nature programs, but in reality, in the place where they belong, they are just so magnificent. I couldn't get enough of watching them.
Well, Pip, you also have to feed yourself on these trips, and part of that choice is personal, because you can decide on things that you like from the many choices available for a long voyage like that. Tell us about your cuisine.
I had a very minimal cooking facilities on board. Although my boat was one of the oldest boats in the race, it was maybe, I think, probably the only one that didn't have sort of like any dedicated cooking facility. So all I had was a jet boil, which is just a metal cup that sits on top of a gas burner and heats up water. And that's the only thing I had. So all of my food was freeze dried. I mean, there was a good selection, but every meal was freeze dried. And then I had dried fruit as my snack, and some vitamin pills. And that was it for 95 days.
Last question for you. 2024 Vendée, are you already making preparations for that?
I definitely am, yes. I got off this one and was just absolutely bursting to go forwards and do the last one. I enjoyed it so much, I learned so much, and I just feel it would be a shame not to take all this knowledge forwards. And hopefully we'll be making an announcement about that in the next couple of weeks.
That's Pip Hare joining us live from Britain. And single-handedly raced around the Vendée Globe, only the 9th woman in history to ever do that. Pip, thank you so much for your time, and congratulations on your success.
Thank you.
Pip, thank you
so much.
And, Karen, of course, as always, salesportstalk.com. That's where all the action is, right?
It certainly is.
All right, we'll see you next week. I'm Rick Tittle. We'll take a quick break. Come on back on Sports Byline.